Hello, everyone, and welcome to Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is your friend who likes to play.
Oh, Mike DiCuccio. Hi, sorry. I thought there was going to be more.
That's the end of the song. That's the...
Yeah.
Did you hear my intro?
I got it now.
Okay. Yeah. If you've never listened to an episode of Film Bookcast before, essentially we begin by talking about some film news and then move on into our discussion segment of the show, in which Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately, and then finally we will move on to our featured review. This week we are reviewing Inside Out, the latest film from director Pete Docter, and the newest offering from Pixar. So, Mike, let's kick off the show. Let's talk about some film news, why not?
Yeah, tell us what's going on.
I will tell you what's going on. So, first piece of film news, probably the biggest piece of film news in the last couple of weeks. Marvel has finally cast the new Spider-Man.
The dawn of the new age of Marvel is upon us.
Yes. Yes. Pretty soon, every movie that's ever released will have a Marvel stamp of approval on it.
Yep.
There'll be superheroes in some capacity, and one of those movies is going to be the new Spider-Man. And Tom Holland is going to be the official star as Peter Parker, Spider-Man. That standalone movie is going to be directed by John Watts, who is an indie director who just came out with a movie that just played at Sundance called Cop Car. It has not been released yet.
That's a Kevin Bacon movie?
I believe Kevin Bacon's in that movie, yeah.
Must be good.
Is that your metric for how you base movies?
Yeah, that's how it works.
Amount of Kevin Bacon in each movie is the... you must not like a lot of movies.
I don't use Rotten Tomato, I use Rotten Bacon, actually. That's how I determine what's good or not.
So a movie that has no Kevin Bacon is not good.
The worst.
So that's a preview of our review of Inside Out. spoilers, there's no Kevin Bacon in Inside Out.
Yeah, I don't even know why we bothered.
But I think this is really cool news. Tom Holland is a guy that I have basically no connection to.
Yeah, has he been in anything? I don't even know who that is.
He was in a movie called The Impossible.
The
tsunami movie from a few years ago with Naomi Watts. He was, I think, her older son in that movie. That was like 5 years ago.
Yeah. He was like a young kid in that.
Yeah. And so I've not seen him in anything since then. But that's a movie I remember liking.
Yeah, that was really intense. He was good.
Yeah, that's a movie I remember liking, but I don't remember that much about. And so,
Yeah.
So, I mean, Tom Holland, I'm sure, is fine. In the role, he looks the part, but he looks like a scrawny white teenager,
yep.
which is what he is. So
that works.
So that's cool. And John Watts is going to be directing. And John Watts is also a guy who I've never seen anything he's done. But Cop Car is like his most major work so far, and has not been released yet. But it is coming out soon. And from what I've heard from critics who have seen Cop Car at Sundance, it's very good. From what I've heard, also very like stylistic and like. It's a stylistic action movie, which I think is an important distinction, because a lot of independent directors have been brought onto studio projects recently.
Right.
Thinking like Colin Trevorrow with Jurassic World, Gareth Edwards and Godzilla, or even Mark Webb for the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in all of those, or at least in Mark Webb's case, and also Colin Trevorrow a little bit, those are movies, they made movies that were fun and quirky, but they didn't really have any action in them or like stylistic scenes.
Right.
And so they seem like odd choices for, you know, big studio blockbuster movies. And they kind of are. Their movies didn't turn out that great. So
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but John Watts, from what I've heard about Cop Car, it's very stylistic, very, like, intense action movie. And so he may have a better shot at making a really good Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Hopefully.
But that will not be the first time we see this new Spider-Man.
Yeah. What a twist.
What a twist. because Tom Holland will be appearing in Captain America Civil War. Pretty much as soon as this casting news broke out, they pretty much like booked him on a plane to, I think, Georgia. I think they're filming it in Georgia. They booked him on a plane to Georgia and was like, all right, there you go.
So that's good. I wonder if how much Spider-Man will be in this, if it'll just be like the post credits, because then I'll be pissed.
Yeah, I feel like a small supporting role is probably the most you're going to get out of this, because they've already been filming for a little while.
Right, yeah, I mean, I don't expect him to be a main character, but I'm hoping they're not like, oh, he's going to be in the new, he'll be in Civil War, but it's only for 40 seconds or whatever.
I feel like they wouldn't announce him to be in the cast of Civil War if it was only a post-credit scene. I feel like if it was just a post-credit
point, yeah.
If it was just a post-credit scene, they would want to not tell anybody that he was doing it, you know, save it for the end.
Post-credits.
But I think the idea of Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe is really exciting to me, partly because Spider-Man is my favorite hero. And true. Partly because I love this Marvel Universe so much. I think it's been just a fun, expansive experience. I'm eager to see Spider-Man, like, interacting with all these, like, now huge heroes, like Iron Man, Captain America.
Yeah. This should be really awesome, I hope.
Hopefully.
Hopefully we'll find out, I guess.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incidentally, I'm hearing great things about Ant-Man. I don't know if you've seen the earlier reviews.
I haven't seen anything, but haven't been looking for anything yet.
Yeah, I mean, the actual reviews haven't come out yet, but a lot of critics have seen it and have tweeted about it. And it's apparently a lot of fun.
Awesome. I'm more excited.
Heard a lot of really good things, so that's something to look forward to. But let's move on from the Marvel stuff and talk about a project that involves Iron Man himself, Robert Downey Jr. Segue.
Nice.
So for the past few years, Robert Downey Jr. has been trying to put together a Pinocchio movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, Robert Downey Jr. will be playing Geppetto in this movie.
Done.
Yeah.
Snarkiest Geppetto of all time.
And so, yeah, for the past few years, he's been trying to make this movie happen, and it just has not been happening for whatever reason. And now, news just broke out earlier today that Paul Thomas Anderson, director of films like The Master and Inherent Vice and There Will Be Blood, and really a lot of the best movies of the last two decades, is going to be writing a draft of this movie and may, in fact, end up directing the movie Pinocchio, starring Robert Downey Jr.
It'll be the most cerebral version of this this story of all time.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a very surprising choice.
Is this part of that, like, Disney live-action revival thing that's been going on?
This is actually Warner Brothers doing this Pinocchio.
Okay.
Because Pinocchio is a public domain thing, so they can kind of just do whatever they want. And, yeah, Robert Downey Jr. was actually supposed to star in Inherent Vice in Joaquin Phoenix's role.
Really? I didn't know that.
He was supposed to be Doc, and he dropped out. There's a weird string of movies that Robert Downey Jr. was attached to and then had to drop out for other things, partially because he was playing Iron Man 24/7.
Yes.
And also because he was busy filming The Judge. Robert Downey Jr. was originally the star of Oz the Great and Powerful.
What?
Yeah, he was going to be Oz.
That would have been awesome.
And he was originally going to be in George Clooney's role in Gravity. What? And dropped out of that.
Those movies would be completely different if he was in them.
Yeah. And I think Oz is Great and Powerful. It's a movie I actually kind of liked, but I think Robert Downey Jr. would have been perfect in that role as Oz the con man.
I kind of want to just see Robert Downey Jr. directed by Sam Raimi.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that would be a lot of fun. So Robert Downey Jr. was supposed to be in Inherent Vice, so Paul Thomas Anderson and him kind of know each other a little bit. That's probably why Robert Downey Jr. brought him on.
Yeah.
And Downey is one of the most powerful actors working today. He holds a lot of sway on his projects. So I think,
would imagine.
Yeah. So I think if he really wants Anderson to direct, like, Anderson will probably direct.
It'll happen.
Yeah.
I'm excited. That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's really odd. It's a really weird and bold choice, but I think if it happens, he could end up making, like, a really crazy, cool Pinocchio movie.
Yeah.
I don't really want to see a new Pinocchio movie, but, like, if Paul Thomas Anderson's doing it, like,
I would probably see it.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to talk about that because that just came out, and I think that's a really weird story. That's cool. And finally, film news segments. So I broke my rule.
Are you a liar, Mike?
I've talked a bit on this podcast about how it's not like a hard and fast rule. Like, I'm not.
Oh,
like,
don't back down from it now. It's too late.
I've talked a bit on this podcast about how I'm not really watching trailers on my own anymore. I'm not trying to seek them out.
Right.
You know, I'm more like I'll see it when I'm in the theater or if it'll be on TV, whatever. You know, I'll be like passively viewing trailers that are brought to me, but I'm not going to actively seek out trailers because I'm trying to not have the story spoiled for me or not have, like, going as fresh as possible. But the discussion surrounding this trailer that we're about to talk about was really interesting to me. And this is a project I've been looking at like for a while, and just thinking about like how they can pull it off, and like it just sounds like an odd thing. But the discussion around this trailer was almost universally positive. Everybody in my Twitter feed was going nuts about it. And so I was like, all right, I'll break the rule.
Go check it out.
This one time, I'll break the rule. And that was for the trailer for Creed.
You're not built for this. These boys come in here, they gotta fight for life. People die in the ring. Your daddy died in the ring.
I don't know him. Ain't got nothing to do with me. I've been fighting my whole life. It's not a choice for me. Every punch I ever thrown has been on my own. Nobody showed me how to do this. I'm ready. On the nose pressure, actually slip zip ties on the protesters. Six wives in the fry of a mold weather. Better medic caviar bar out in Odessa. Dirty needles breaking all the old records. On that hose, one shovel, that's an old treasure. Old seat, you Steve, as a gold test. I think a rose in the waves, passing from the old levels. This picture's from the 10th round of the first fight, right? I heard about a third fight between you and Apollo behind closed doors. Is that true?
How do you know all this?
I'm a son.
Now, Creed is the newest film in the Rocky franchise, basically. Yeah. But it's also, it's basically an original story that happens to...
be in that universe?
Be in that universe, yeah. Basically, Creed stars Michael B. Jordan as Apollo Creed's son. Adonis Creed, I think his name is. So Michael B. Jordan is the star. Ryan Coogler, who directed Fruitvale Station, which also starred Michael B. Jordan, is directing. And it looks great.
Yeah, this is an instance of, I think, the trailer that doesn't fall into the things that we complain about trailers doing all the time, where they spoil stories and give away twists and stuff.
Yeah.
So far, all we know is that he's Apollo Creed's son, and he will be fighting with Rocky as his trainer, and that's it.
Yes.
And it looks great.
Yeah, I'm so blown away by this trailer, because it looks like, I've always been a huge fan of the Rocky movies.
Yeah.
Okay. Rocky 1 and 2, I think, are legitimately great. Rocky 3 is a lot of fun. Rocky 4 is the best movie ever made. And.
I wasn't ready for that.
Rocky 5 is terrible. I'm willing to go in on that. But I thought Rocky Balboa was a really strong finish to that series.
Right.
I thought that was a really great ending. It made up for the mistakes for Rocky 5, basically. When I say Rocky IV is the greatest movie ever made, I'm being facetious.
okay, all right, good save.
But I do kind of love that movie. It's just just 80s cheesiness all over the place. That's but Creed looks like it's going back to the tone of like Rocky I, Rocky II, and Rocky VI, Rocky Balboa, right. Of like a really serious like sports drama. Like it's not like he's not fighting Mr. T. He's not fighting.
Yeah.
He's not like stopping.
He's not fighting communism.
Yeah, he's not stopping the Cold War. Right. You know, this was like down and out gritty Rocky One style movie.
Yeah.
It looks like a great, it basically doesn't erase the fact that all those other movies happened.
Right. You know
what I mean? It looks like a really great continuation of Rocky while standing on its own. There's a respect for what's coming before it. The main plot of this movie is that, Adonis is Apollo Creed's son, and Apollo Creed died in Rocky IV, and that's part of the plot of the, like, that's part of the exposition in this movie. There's a part in the trailer where they reference the ending of Rocky III, where young Adonis Creed is like in the sports bar with Rocky. And it's like, oh, you know, there's a rumors about like a third fight that you guys had behind closed doors or something. Is that true? Something like
right.
that. And then, like, thing is, like, this trailer goes on for like two minutes 45 seconds.
Yeah, it's a long trailer.
Yeah, and the first 2 minutes, Sylvester Stallone is not even in it.
Which is great.
Yeah, you would not even know this is a Rocky movie until Sylvester Stallone shows up.
Yep. Which I like a lot, actually. Yeah.
I think having him in the role of the trainer as basically Mickey is so cool. it's a really cool direction for that character. So I think Creed looks great. I am actually really excited for Creed now.
Yeah, yeah, I'm excited to see this.
Yeah.
Hopefully they don't put out 27 more trailers, which I'm sure they will.
Right. I mean, I'm not, like, this is the one and done for me. Like, I'm not going to seek out the rest. But yeah, so I broke my rule for this trailer. I'm glad I did, because this trailer looked really cool.
Yeah.
And so that's just it. I wanted to talk about the trailer a little bit. So, Mike, are you ready to move on into our discussions?
Yes, let's do it.
All right. Now, Mike, you have things to discuss.
I do indeed.
All right, good. So discuss this, them.
For this episode, I'm actually going to be talking about a book rather than a TV or movie or anything.
What kind of monster still reads books?
A person that can read. Duh. So a friend of mine gave me this book called Shock Value by Jason Zinnemann. And Jason Zinnemann is a theater critic, actually, for the New York Times, I believe. Yes, okay. New York Times, but he writes about film and TV and stuff, and he's had articles in Vanity Fair and The Economist, and so he's a pretty prolific critic, I guess. And this book is all about how the horror genre changed in the late 60s and early 70s, and, you know, with films like Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist that made horror move from, like, grindhouse exploitation to, like, quote-unquote film, and took these subjects very seriously and used actual, you know, dramatic directors like Roman Polanski and, like, that kind of, and that whole thing.
Right.
And shifted the conversation of horror movies. So if you're into horror stuff or, you know, are interested in that era of movies and how film evolved over, you know, over the last decade or so, or, I mean, century, I would say check it out. And it's really awesome. It's a weird mix of, like, deep film analysis of, like, the, like, specific movies. Like, each chapter kind of focuses on a movie and director. So, like, Wes Craven and Last House on the Left and George Romero and Night of the Living Dead and, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. But he also gives a history of how those films got made and how, like, near impossible. And it was, like, the weirdest alignment of circumstances to let this happen, like, with the drop of the production code and, like, you know, the Vietnam and all that stuff going on in the country. So it's really cool and interesting. So people should check it out.
Nice.
So it's called Shock Value by Jason Zinnemann.
All right. That sounds really cool, actually. That's really neat.
Yeah.
As like a horror geek, that's like...
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Seems like a really valuable book to have.
Yeah. Apparently Wes Craven is insane, in case you guys were wondering. He, like, had a family. He was raised fundamentalist Catholic and was, like, went to college and, like, found pot. I was like, that's all dumb. I'm out of here. And then, like, got married and just rode his motorcycle and left his... It was weird. He's nuts. Another weird thing. Apparently, The Hills Have Eyes is based on when he was in the Southwest on that cross-country motorcycle trip. And he was, like, you know, a long-haired hippie. And, like, they were, like, gonna murder him. And he was like, oh, you're full of crap. No way. And they were like, we could throw your body in a mine shaft and no one would ever know. And he's like, oh shit, they're real. And he, like, got it. He, like, took off. And then he based that movie on that experience.
That's awesome.
There you go.
So yeah, if you want to check out more crazy Wes Craven stories.
Yeah, basically.
Check out that book called Shock Value.
Yep.
All right. And then my discussions. I wanted to briefly mention the fact that I've been watching a bunch of Joe Dante movies over the past couple weeks. Joe Dante has always been a director I've really admired. He directed movies like Gremlins and The Burbs.
Gremlins is in here, actually. I forgot about that.
Is it?
Yeah, he talks about that shift towards horror comedy in the 80s.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and Joe Dante is a big part of that trend. He is one of the zaniest directors of the 80s and 90s. I think, and that's part of why I like him so much. His movies have like they're actually very heavily influenced by Looney Tunes.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
You'll see in a lot of his movies there'll be like references to Looney Tunes and stuff like that, and also to horror movies of like the 50s and sci-fi movies of the 50s also.
Yeah.
And Joe Dante's a director I've always really admired. He has a new movie that just came out called Burying the X, which is a horror comedy starring Anton Yelchin and Alexander Daddario. I have not seen that movie yet. It's on video on demand now, and I do plan on watching that soon. But I thought, in the meantime, you know,
catalog.
Joe Dante's director I've always really liked, but it's not somebody that I've actually like actively seeked out his movies for. like I've done with a few other directors, and I thought I should fix that. So I watched 3 Joe Dante movies that I had not seen over the last couple of weeks. The first of which was called Explorers, which is a movie from 1985. It's a movie made right after Gremlins. And this movie, the first half of this movie is amazing. And the second half is borderline terrible. But
okay.
But this is a movie about...
Quite the dichotomy.
This movie about 3 young kids growing up in small town suburbia. Side note, small town suburbia is in like all of Joe Dante's movies.
Right.
As like as it's a significant part of his stuff, and it's part of why I really like about it. I think he really like gets it.
Yeah.
But this is about like 3 kids growing up in the 80s. 2 of them are Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix.
Wow.
In their film debuts. So there's that. There's that.
That's cool.
But it's about 3 kids who. Build themselves a spaceship. And
I'm with you so far.
And travel into space.
You lost me.
Well, here's the thing. The first hour of the movie is about... basically. So they don't really build a spaceship. What they do is they build... They kind of create this... One of the kids is like a science geek, and he creates some kind of thing, like this bubble that they can travel in.
All right.
It doesn't make that much sense. I'm not saying it does. But
it's movies, so it's okay.
Yeah. You can kind of just buy into it. And they build a spaceship that they all like, sit in the bubble. And they're kind of traveling around the city and stuff. And then eventually they go into space. Because throughout the first hour, they've been getting this call from this like other being. And they don't know from what. So the first hour, about an hour in, they end up going into space. And that first hour is terrific. Like, I think it really, like, it gets those kids really well. Like, those kids are a lot of fun to be around. It gets, like... Mm-hmm. It just gets, like, the boredom of suburbia and, like, what these kids have to do to entertain themselves by, like, building the spaceship. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun to watch. It's very heavily sci-fi geek. There's a lot of scenes where it's just, like, referencing 50s sci-fi movies.
Stuff that's come before.
Yeah. And so, but then about once they get into space, the movie completely changes.
All right.
This is like a 30-year-old movie, so I don't really like feel like I if this is spoilers at this point, but
yeah,
it's so bizarre.
Okay,
and I kind of respect it based on just like how weird it gets, but how, also
that they went there.
Yeah, but it also does not work at all.
Okay, is that when it becomes the horror part, or is that being throughout the whole movie?
Well, I mean, Joe Dante doesn't work exclusively in horror.
Right.
This is more of a sci-fi thing. Although there are elements of horror when they first get to space, but the aliens themselves. Look terrible and disgusting, and not like they're guys in costumes, and they like the actual costumes themselves are like good and they function, but like just the design of them is really bad. And the way that they speak and the way that they like communicate, nothing works.
Right.
And there's like there's a central metaphor that's like they're going for there, and it like it's sort of a stretch and it almost works, but it doesn't.
It's not quite, though.
And I was actually reading into the making of this movie, and it seemed like it was a very rushed production. There was a lot of stuff that got cut out or like was changed at the last minute. And that's a shame. But Explorers is well worth checking out, I think, for A, the first hour, which I think is great.
Right.
And B, just to see how weird it gets at the end.
That'll do it.
So there's that. One of the other movies I watched was The Hole.
Okay.
Which is a horror movie that Joe Dante directed in 2009. And this movie I liked a lot. I think this is really fun all the way through. It's not like flat out like terrifying horror. It's more like a family style horror movie. The Poltergeist, I guess, is the closest example I can think of. But this is a really cool movie. It's about like this kid who his family who moves into this suburban town, suburbia.
Yep.
And he and his brother and the neighbor girl go into the basement and find this bottomless pit. And basically, this bottomless pit, once you look into this pit, the pit, like, sees your darkest fear, and then it manifests that fear.
So it's it? kind of?
Yes.
All right.
A little bit, sure.
Fair enough.
In any case, it's a really fun movie. I really enjoyed it. It has a lot of cool scenes, and it's just really charming. I really enjoyed it. That's all I really wanted to say about The Hole. The other movie I watched was Interspace, which is one of his bigger movies that I had not seen. Have you heard of Interspace, Mike?
Is this Dennis Quaid? Right?
Yes. Yeah, Dennis Quaid.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it, though.
Okay. That's Dennis Quaid and Martin Short and Meg Ryan. Okay. And basically, Inner Space is another sci-fi movie. It's sci-fi comedy about Dennis Quaid's like a fighter pilot who's like signs up for this experiment where he gets shrunken down.
Okay.
To go inside this rabbit as like a test thing. Right. But the experiment goes wrong because people are after the shrinking technology, and he ends up inside Martin Short's body.
Okay.
And so they have to go on an adventure together to stop the guys to get him out of his body.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun. It's really funny.
That's cool. Fun
scenes. Dennis Quaid is great in this movie. He's doing like a Han Solo meets Jack Nicholson
wow.
type of cool guy that is really fun. Martin Short brings a lot of like physical comedy to the role, and it's
right.
really enjoyable. So Inner Space is a pretty well-known movie of Joe Dante's, so I'm not going to talk too much about it because it is like pretty well-known. But yeah. Those three movies, I think, are all varying degrees of good, except for The Last Half of Explorers.
That one doesn't count.
Yeah. And I am going to check out Burying the X, because it's supposed to be, you know, I've heard mixed things about it, but I'm just interested in the new Joe Dante movie, so.
Cool.
Definitely worth checking out. One other thing I wanted to talk about briefly was this new AMC TV show called Humans.
All right.
Now, Mike, you enjoy science fiction.
I do indeed, yes.
Yes. And you enjoyed Ex Machina.
I loved Ex Machina.
Yes, I loved Ex Machina, too. This is Ex Machina, the TV show, basically.
Yeah, I'm in. Say no more.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I feel like there's been a lot of stuff lately involving artificial intelligence as, like, its main thesis. In addition to Ex Machina, I mean, even, like, Avengers Age of Ultron had that as the villain.
It's the new Cold War.
Yeah. Like, that's, Chappie.
Chappie, right.
That's another one. And Chappie was one of those examples that didn't treat it so well, but like,
yeah,
I think this TV show is closer to Ex Machina than it is to Chappie, which I think is just the highest compliment I could possibly give something.
So D. Antwoord's not in it?
Oh, that's a deal breaker.
Never mind then.
But the first episode just aired on Sunday. I'm definitely gonna keep watching. Basically it's about a family, living in this future where robots are common, like they're commonplace, like, and people use them as like, you know, an extra hand around the house. They use them as like nannies or like slaves, basically.
Right.
You know, it reminded me of this, the quote from The World's End where they kept saying, it's like, well, does anyone know what the term robot means? Oh yeah, it means slave. And we're not slaves. No, we're very happy. But it's definitely a solid show and one that I think is worth checking out. So
okay, cool. I'm glad AMC is like doing stuff, because now that all their good shows are done, like I was worried for a while for them.
Yeah,
they're gonna do.
I mean, they still have The Walking Dead, which is a show that was really bad for a really long time, but I think this last season has been great, actually.
But I think that show is probably never going to die.
Oh.
Because it's about zombies.
Clever. Good one.
That's
and they also...
I've been reading a lot about horror. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah, but they also have Better Call Saul.
That's true. I forgot about that.
Which is great.
It was great.
Yeah, that's a really good show. And
but it was only like 10 episodes or 8 episodes or whatever it was.
It was 10 episodes, which is about what a normal cable TV show season is.
That's true.
But yes, Breaking Bad's over, but we have Better Call Saul to take its place. Mad Men's over. Nothing will ever replace it. It's irreplaceable.
Did your crazy fan theory about that show, or EJ's crazy fan theory, ever come true?
About what?
About Mad Men, or that they're all spies?
Yeah, for those who don't know EJ.
True.
Yeah, my old roommate had a theory that every character on Mad Men was secretly a spy working for someone else. And he actually came up with this theory, like, really early on, like, before it was revealed that Don Draper was Dick Whitman.
Right.
And so that, like, helped solidify his crazy theory. And that was like his running joke, yeah. But no, that didn't happen.
Oh, all right. I was really pulling for it. That's all.
But the ending of Mad Men was amazing and great. Just throwing that out there. But Humans is a really solid show. I've heard Halt and Catch Fire has gotten really good.
Yeah, I think that's up on Netflix now, season one. So
I was actually really interested in Halt and Catch Fire in its first season, but I never watched it because all of the reviews said it was really bad. And I was just like, well, you know, I wanted to see it for myself and judge for myself, but like I had so much else going on, I didn't really have the time. And now that the second season is starting, or has started, it's on now. All I've heard is great things. And so I feel really betrayed by both the critical community and AMC.
And how could they do that to you?
Exactly, yeah.
They got to pick either good or bad. It can't be both.
Yeah, exactly. But Humans is a really solid show.
Back to the main point.
They also have Fear of the Walking Dead coming out, the spinoff of The Walking Dead.
Did that happen yet? No, right?
It's coming out in August. And I have very little interest in that show, but I'm probably going to watch it. So,
yeah.
There's that. They also have a Preacher, which is going to be awesome. I'm really excited for Preacher. That's based on a comic book, and it's the pilot's being written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. So I'm really excited for that. But yeah, I think AMC does have a promising lineup coming up. I was worried about them for a while because, you know, Breaking Bad and Mad Men were two of the best shows of their generation. And it's like, where can they go from here? And
how could they do it?
You know, I feel like they can, if they play the cards right, they can rival like FX or HBO in terms of like quality programming. Right. Those are, FX and HBO are the two channels that I think of when I think of like great quality programming. By the way, I've actually, speaking of FX, I started watching Fargo again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
What do you think?
It's very good.
Excellent.
It's very good. Yeah, you know, listeners may not know, but I bought the Blu-ray to Fargo season one a while ago and never really got around to watching it. So now I've seen a few episodes and I am on board.
Yes.
It's so good. It's really amazing. So there's that as well. But
we'll discuss season two when that happens.
Yes, exactly. But I think that about wraps up the discussions, I think. We've went on a lot of tangents here.
45 minutes later.
So with that, all that in mind, let's go into our featured review of Inside Out.
Do you ever look at someone and wonder what is going on inside their head?
Ahem. Uh-oh, she's looking at us.
What did she say?
Sorry, sir. No one was listening.
Did you guys pick up on that?
He's making that stupid face again.
Sir, she just rolled her eyes at us.
Is it garbage night?
We left the toilet seat up.
What? What is it, woman? What?
For this, we gave up that Brazilian helicopter pilot?
Come, fly with me, gachinha.
I'm joy. This is sadness. That's anger.
What?
This is disgust.
Ugh.
And that's fear.
Ah!
We're Riley's emotions. We're what make Riley, Riley.
Ah! Look out!
Get off of me!
Nice job keeping it subtle, anger.
My pleasure, Joy.
These are Riley's memories, and they're mostly happy.
I wanted to maybe hold one.
Sadness, what are you doing?
The core memories!
This is madness!
Can I say that curse word now?
That was from the trailer for Inside Out, the newest film from director Pete Docter. It was written by Pete Docter, Meg LaFalve, and Josh Cooley. The film stars Amy Poehler, Phyllis Smith, Lewis Black, Bill Hader, Mindy Kaling, Caitlin Diaz, Diane Lane, and Kyle MacLachlan. Here's the plot summary from IMDb. After young Riley is uprooted from Midwest life and moved to San Francisco, her emotions, joy, fear, anger, disgust, and sadness, conflict on how best to navigate a new city, house, and school. Now, Mike.
Yeah.
Do you like Pixar movies?
In theory, yes, but all of them have zero bacons, so.
Is Kevin Bacon done any Pixar movies? I feel like I'm going to look this up, but I
feel like he probably has, but I don't think so.
I mean, you're probably right that he hasn't been in any. However, I feel like he was in one, and I'm going to look it up now.
I feel like that about a lot of movies in Kevin Bacon. Like, maybe he was in it. but yes, I do love Pixar movies, to answer your question in a real answer.
Very cool. Yes, to confirm your thing, yeah, Kevin Bacon is in he's not in any Pixar movies.
No Pixars?
Yeah.
Isn't it even worth it as a studio anymore?
Yes. Well, here's the thing. I mean, I love Pixar, too. I've been obsessed with Pixar since I was a kid.
Yeah.
As, like, a six-year-old kid who was obsessed with movies, Pixar was like one of those things where like he was obsessed with Pixar. My first movie ever in a theater was the original Toy Story.
Wow.
Just throwing that out there.
That's awesome.
I was 2 years old. I don't remember it at all, but I that's what
there's proof.
That's what I've been told.
Yeah. I don't remember if I saw that in theaters. Probably.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Possibly. But, I mean, in the last couple of years, I feel like Pixar movies, like, they hit a bit of a slump in the last couple of years. And it's weird because Pixar, like, over the course of its first 15 years as a studio, produced, like, 11 movies.
Yeah.
And I think 9 of them are amazing.
Did all of them win Oscars, probably?
Basically, I think the best, actually, I actually do, I know this by memory. The best animated feature Oscar was not introduced until 2001.
Really?
Yeah. That was the first year they ever did it. So Toy Story, I think Toy Story won an honorary Oscar for like revolutionizing CGI in like a full, being the first full-length CGI movie. But so the first time Pixar was nominated for Best Animated Feature Oscar was Monsters, Inc. And that lost to Shrek.
God damn it.
Yeah, but I think I want to say every subsequent Pixar movie won Best Animated Feature of the Oscars.
If not, it seems that way.
Up through Toy Story 3. And then Brave also won, I think. I think Cars 2 lost.
Probably. I hope so.
But it might not have. I'm actually... Maybe I should look that up, too. I'm pretty sure Cars 2 lost, and Monsters University, I don't think, was even nominated.
Yeah, probably not.
So, I'm going to look this up right now.
Preparation. But what's your favorite of them, if you can do that?
My favorite Pixar film.
Yeah.
It's a tough call. I actually tweeted out my ranking of Pixar movies the other day, so I can make that call.
So you can do it.
Yes.
You're on record.
Yeah, Cars 2 was not nominated for Best Animated Feature. Best Animated Feature. But yeah, my favorite Pixar movie is The Incredibles.
Yeah.
It is. That is my favorite. Monsters University was also not nominated for Best Animated Feature.
Travesty.
But here's the thing. So The Incredibles is great, and pretty much everything from their first movie through their 11th movie, which is Toy Story 3. Like, I would say it all ranks from either very good to, like, greatest movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Wow.
Like, that's a little bit of hyperbole, but they made some amazing movies in that 15-year span. And then immediately after that, their next three movies were Cars 2, Brave, and Monsters University. And all of which are movies that I don't think are as bad as their reputation suggests.
Right.
But aren't very good. And actually, okay. Well, that's Monsters University is okay. That's a solid time.
I don't think I actually saw that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, but those three movies are not as bad as the reputation suggests, but they're not that great. And they're not, certainly not up to like the standard that Pixar had built for themselves.
Right. And I think that's why so many people dislike that. Like, you know, they have that reputation just because they don't meet Pixar standards.
Exactly. And so here comes Inside Out.
Right.
Which is an original concept, which is part of what people want from Pixar, because a lot of these movies, like, in addition to Cars 2 and Monsters University, which have both been sequels, there's other Pixar movies that have been announced, including Finding Dory, Toy Story 4, and The Incredibles 2. And, you know, for a studio that spent its first 15 years crafting these amazing original stories, it's really disheartening to see, like, you know, just sequels to all of these stories coming out instead of more original stuff coming out.
Right.
But here's Inside Out.
Yeah. The one.
An original concept. Not only an original concept, but also a side note. Had the highest grossing opening weekend for any original movie ever.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
It made $90 million on its opening weekend. And that's competing against Jurassic World also.
Which we know has all the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's awesome.
And so I think that's pretty neat. I think it beat Avatar for that record.
Right on.
So there's that. Like, it's a movie that's not based on anything. Not a sequel, not an adaptation of a book or whatever. This is a completely original idea. And I think it's really neat because I was starting to worry about Pixar, man.
Yeah?
I was getting really bummed about it because that's like that studio has been such a huge part of my childhood, and my entire life. And to see them come out with like subpar products is disappointing to me. A couple years ago, I wrote an essay for the website called GetReal.net, and that website no longer exists. But so I will not be able to link to it in the show notes. But I have.
And you worried that was going to happen to Pixar.
Yes, but the essay was called No School Like the Old School, How Pixar Risks Damaging Its Reputation with Sequel After Sequel.
Man, what a catchy title.
I called it No School Like the Old School because that's my favorite line in The Incredibles.
Perfect.
I'm going to read a bit from that essay because I think it sort of applies here. Okay?
Yeah.
If you'll indulge me.
I don't think I have a choice.
All right, here's a bit from that essay that I wrote. All right, let's look at every Pixar film released over the course of their first 15 years of feature films. There's Toy Story, A Bug's Life, Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, The Incredibles, Cars, Ratatouille, WALL-E, Up, and Toy Story 3. Out of 11 films, only two were sequels, both part of the same series, both of which ended up feeling like stories that needed to be told within that world. Now, even removing the weaker but still good films from the roster, A Bug's Life and Cars, that leaves seven original phenomenal films, all released by the same studio, in a relatively short amount of time. And there's very little other... I can't think of another studio that can boast a batting average of that magnitude. And that begs the question, is it unfair to hold Pixar to such a high standard? It's famously been said that many of those films were first conceived during a lunch held near the completion of Toy Story between John Lasseter, Andrew Stanton, Pete Docter, and Joe Ranft. That by itself resulted in A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, and WALL-E, all in that one lunch. The Incredibles and Ratatouille, though certainly a team effort by all involved, owe a great deal to the brilliance of Brad Bird. Cars, despite its faults, was a passion project for John Lasseter and very much felt like it. So could Pixar's reputation of quality merely be the result of everything happening at the right time in quick succession, and was it only a matter of time until the studio's luck began to run out? That's basically the question I posed in that essay. And
right.
I think that means something where it's, you had basically what's been collectively known as the Pixar Brain Trust.
Right.
You have John Lasseter, Andrew Stanton, Pete Docter, Joe Ranft, and Brad Bird. That was like the original group. Minus Brad Bird in the original group, but he kind of just came on to do The Incredibles and Ratatouille. But I count him because he's great.
Because he did a really good job.
Exactly. Like, he's awesome and brilliant. But 15 years later, or 20 years later, Inside Out, it's been almost 20 years since Toy Story came out. This is the 20-year anniversary of Toy Story. 20 years later, the Pixar Brain Trust looks a lot different, almost by necessity. Because John Lasseter is the head of Disney Animation now. So he's kind of overseeing everything there.
Yeah.
Not just Pixar anymore. So his attention is divided. Andrew Stanton left for a long time to go make John Carter. He left to make his live-action debut. Brad Bird, same thing. He went into Mission Impossible and Tomorrowland.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Ranft actually died in 2005 in a car crash. And then there's Pete Docter, who was still around and was still kicking and still made this movie, Inside Out. And so I think that's a part of what this movie brings to the table is that it has one of the original Pixar guys doing his thing. Whereas the last couple, I mean, Cars 2, to be fair, was directed by John Lasseter.
But except for that one.
But that's John. I mean,
that was a cash grab.
Cars 2, in fairness, yeah, kind of was. I mean, it's also directed by Brett. Well, actually, if I recall correctly, around Cars 2, Brad Lewis was the original director of Cars 2. And then John Lasseter came on late in the game to kind of take over as director, and Brad Lewis was demoted to co-director.
Okay.
And there's actually a lot of Pixar movies where you can see that happening. That happened with Brave, actually. Brenda Chapman was directing Brave, and then, like, was kicked off the project, like, a year and a half before it came out. And Mark Andrews ended up directing it. Ratatouille is another one where somebody else was making it, and then it was not working, and Brad Bird ended up swooping in to save the day. And that actually happened to their next movie, The Good Dinosaur, which was being directed by Bob Peterson, who was the co-director of Up and was the voice of Roz and Monsters, Inc. and Doug and Up. He was directing The Good Dinosaur and ended up being taken off the project and is now working on something else at Pixar. So that's actually a fairly frequent thing that happens at Pixar, so it's not like the end of the world when that happens.
Yeah.
But I think it's encouraging to see a new movie from Pete Docter, who's been one of the main voices of Pixar in its many years of existence. So I guess what I'm saying is, Mike,
Yeah. Yes.
What did you think of Inside Out?
I wasn't ready for such a field trip. I wasn't expecting that. Although I guess
You call it a field trip?
A field trip, yes.
That's great. That's clever.
Thanks. Thanks, Internet. I mean, I guess I should have been ready since it's a Pixar movie and they're kind of known for that. But this was awesome. Like that was, I don't know. I just saw it 2 hours ago. So I haven't processed everything yet.
Right.
But it was awesome to see, like, you know, like you said, a original thought like that happened. I don't know. It was really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. I didn't know that it broke that record. That's awesome.
Yes. So, I mean, Pete Docter was the director of Monsters, Inc. and also Up. And I think Pete Docter's movies in Pixar are probably the ones that make people cry the most. At least Up does. Monsters, Inc. Never made me tear up. But Up,
not so much.
Up is like the first 10 minutes of Up are like some of those brutal...
it's the saddest movie of all time.
Yeah.
Just those 10 minutes, though.
Yes. Inside Out is like that, but for the entire running time.
Yeah. There's that great, I'm sure, that's been going around online. I know you probably saw it, too. It's like, oh, Pixar timeline, like 1995, Toy Story, you know, what if toys had feelings? And then it keeps going, And then 2015, what if feelings had feelings?
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's perfect.
Yes. So Inside Out, really, I think it brings a lot of the old Pixar magic back. Yes. I wouldn't say it stands along with the best of the best of their work, but it feels like a really good Pixar movie, and that's really what I wanted out of this.
It has that fantastical element of the classic Pixar movies.
Yeah, they're so good at creating these worlds and like allowing people to just like go and like experience them. I think Monsters, Inc. is one of the best examples of that, I think, where they have this entire world of monsters and concepts, and it just throws a lot at you, and you just kind of go with it.
And I think one of the concepts that there's like that theme of, you know, it's like the world we don't get to see is just as bureaucratic as our world, which I think is really funny and hilarious. Like the monsters, they have a schedule to keep. The toys have that big meeting in Toy Story all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
And this is like run like a business. You know?
Yeah,
like
your
brain.
This is also exactly the same. And I really love that about this. It takes, it's weird because it takes the ideas of like the complex feelings of emotion. It takes like, it's a really complex concept, I think. And it basically breaks them down to like this really simple, personification of these emotions.
Yeah. Very archetypal.
And then through that reveals how complex they are.
Right.
Which I think is really amazing and like really genius.
There's some like high level stuff going on. I'm like, this is a kids movie. Like,
yeah.
Which the Pixar always manages to do is work that into a kid's story.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have always said that Pixar makes movies for kids and adults. But I feel like it's a sort of thing where it's like they really make movies for adults that kids can also just enjoy.
I think you're right. I think that's what it is. It's an excuse to go to the movies for the parents.
Yeah, exactly. And we haven't even talked about the cast of this movie. Amy Poehler is the voice of Joy. And that is, I'm saying that as in Amy Poehler is the literal voice of Joy and not.
But also in this movie, she plays Joy.
But also in this movie, she is Joy. whoever cast Amy Poehler in this role deserves some kind of medal.
God. This the voice casting for this is phenomenal.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, Lewis Black is Anger.
A second, I was like, is that Lewis Black? And then the first, like, rage yell thing he does, I was like, that's definitely they got the personification of each emotion to be the emotion.
Yeah, it's kind of great. Phyllis Smith, who played Phyllis on The Office, is Sadness. Bill Hader is Fear. And Mindy Kaling is Disgust. All of them are perfectly cast.
Oh my god, I didn't realize. Oh, that's awesome that she's Disgust. Yeah, spot on.
Yes. And I thought most of these characters really worked. I thought Disgust felt a little underdeveloped compared to everyone else.
Yeah.
Personally, just because,
is that an emotion that you have?
I mean, I could buy that it was an emotion, but it just felt like her role in the movie felt not as complete as the other characters, which is a small complaint. I think she's really funny in the movie, but Like, Lewis Black as anger is perfect.
Yeah.
Bill Hader as fear. Amazing.
Great.
There's a line that he has at the beginning of the movie where I just thought, yep, that's my entire life. Where where he says, it's like, well, we didn't die today, so I consider today a rousing success.
Yes, that was like, yep, great.
That's
when he makes the list, I thought it was amazing. He makes the list of worst possible scenarios at your first day of school. And he's like, oh, you know, earthquake, whatever, I forget what the second one is. And he's like, and finally getting called on by the teacher. And she calls on Riley, right out of the gate! It was amazing.
He was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. And I think the animation of this movie is really nice. I don't think it pushes boundaries the way other Pixar movies have pushed boundaries in animation.
There was a moment.
Okay.
I'll save the spoiler.
That's a spoiler. But I know what you're talking about. And that is really great. I'm not saying it's bad. I think it looks great. I think it's just relatively standard compared to other Pixar movies.
True.
I think probably the best... I think either Finding Nemo or WALL-E are the two that I think are the most amazingly animated movies. Coincidentally, those are both directed by Andrew Stanton, so maybe it's just his thing. But those movies, like, really, like... There's such a beauty to WALL-E, and there's such a beauty to the world of Finding Nemo that I really love.
Yeah.
And, I mean, all of their movies, like, try to do new things in animation.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like, Brave even, like, looks great. Looks amazing. I've seen the documentaries about, like, how difficult it is to just animate her hair.
I could imagine, yeah.
Yeah. And I think Inside Out does look amazing and looks great. It just doesn't, like, push the boundaries the way other Pixar movies have. But in terms of visual storytelling, I think this movie is phenomenal.
I would agree.
Its use of color is, like...
So awesome.
Yeah, it's...
The ambient glow that they all have.
Yeah.
Or the emotions have, at least.
Yes, definitely.
It's so cool.
But it coordinates color in with, like, each emotion. So joy is yellow, sadness is blue, anger is red, fear is purple, and green is disgust. And it, like, is able to tell you what's going on in the movie just based on these colors, like, appearing throughout. Like, you can see, like, a memory and think, oh, that's a joyful memory.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So I think that in itself is really impressive. And like we said, it hits really hard in its emotional moments.
Yeah.
which I think most of which we'll save for spoilers, but, there's a lot of intense stuff happening here.
yeah, this is a very real movie.
Yeah. And it's crazy to think the stakes in this movie are actually like relatively low. Because ultimately this is a movie about whether a girl will be happy or sad. Boiling it down to, like, its bare essence, it's ultimately about whether it's happy or sad. And I was amazed at how much this movie invested me in that plot.
Right.
So I thought that was great. The world building in this movie.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do this.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked a little bit about, like, how Pixar's able to create these amazing and expansive worlds. And I think this is one of their best. I mean, this is, like... in the first few minutes, you have Joy kind of explaining everything, kind of like going through, like, this is what we do, this is what we do. But more of it gets revealed as it goes on, like its function and how it, like, works. So you have, like, things like personality islands, you have memory balls, stuff like that, that really makes this world come alive and makes you feel, and it makes you, like, think about, like, how complex this world is. And it's all just inside this one little girl's mind.
It's her brain.
And then you think about, like, how everyone else in the world has this inside their head.
It's one of those weird things where you're like, you know, you become hyper aware of consciousness and you try to think about that in what that would mean. That if, like, if I have thoughts in my brain, that means everyone else also has thoughts in their brain.
And it blows your mind.
Yeah. This is like some high level philosophy stuff. Yeah, and it's a cute little animated 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
And it nails all of it.
Yeah, I thought this was a really impressive movie. It's really great to have a great Pixar movie again. I was worried for a little while. And
sometimes you just need a good cry.
Exactly.
Which is a theme in this movie.
Yeah, that is true. Which we'll get to in spoilers. But did you cry during this movie, Mike?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Yeah, I teared up a little bit.
I had two very manly tears. Just one at a time in two moments. Yeah.
So I think we do want to talk about this movie more, but we're going to get to spoilers. Before we do spoilers, I wanted to talk a little bit about the short film that came before Inside Out, Lava, what did you think of Lava?
I actually didn't get to see all of it because the person who I went with was late, so we got there right in the last quarter of it, probably.
Okay.
So well, I don't know. I didn't get to see all of it, so
well, consider,
tell me what...
Consider yourself lucky, because I thought Lava was terrible.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I hated it so much. And the animation's really nice in Lava.
Yeah. The song was nice, whatever it was telling. I don't know.
The song was fine. Basically, the short is about this lonely volcano who wants to be loved. And, you know, he's singing this song about how he hopes he'll be loved one day. And there's a girl volcano that's underneath the water who can hear the song, but she tragically can't reach him because she's a volcano.
Right. Underwater.
Yeah. But then, like, millions of years pass, and the one volcano is, like, sinking into the water, lets out, like, a burst of lava, and then as he does that, like, he falls down to the ground, and then the lady volcano rises
up. Now above the water,
above the water, and then she sings the song, and then he rises up again, and they meet, and that's it. And, like, Pixar shorts are often, like, a highlight of their films. Like, I think they're really, a lot of them are great.
I will never forget the old man playing chess one.
Jerry's Game. Yeah, that's great.
That will be a lifelong memory for me.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
That will be a yellow one.
Nice.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's a great one. For the Birds is great. Presto. Like, a lot. They have a lot of great shorts.
Yeah.
And I thought this was the absolute worst one. Like,
wow.
I mean, part of what I like about the shorts, most of them are silent.
Right. That's true. I did know. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think of that.
Most of them are silent shorts. This one has a song.
This one's a musical.
The song is entirely built around a terrible pun.
The lava sounds like love.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the volcano is just singing like, oh, I want somebody to lava. And it's like, fuck you. That's the worst thing. You know, lava kills everything.
That's true. But not other lava.
And also, I think the male volcano looks terrifying.
he's got a Jabba the Hutt feel going.
Yeah. It just looks really weird and disorienting and terrible. So I thought Lava was terrible. I thought that was, like, one of the worst shorts they've ever done.
But if you can make it through that, you'll...
If you could suffer through the 7 minutes of Lava, or show up late, like Mike did...
Yeah, it worked out, I guess.
Yeah. Inside Out is worth sitting through Lava for. Which is the highest recommendation I could give anything.
Wow. Wow.
So, That's that. Let's move on into spoilers for Inside Out. All right, here's some spoilers for Inside Out. So, Mike, let's talk about the character of Bing Bong.
Okay, Yes, let's. The source of one of my manly tears.
Yes, so Bing Bong is played by Richard Kind. Bing Bong is essentially an imaginary friend that Riley dreamed up when she was a kid. Mm-hmm. And is now kind of wandering around her memory banks, just doing his thing, and he develops a relationship with Joy and Sadness. He helps them out, tries to get them to the control center. Back to headquarters. And at a certain point in the movie, Joy and Bing Bong get trapped in this barren wasteland of discarded memories.
Yeah, that was really dark. I mean, literally, there was low light, and also that was really crazy.
I thought that was an amazing concept, first of all, that barren wasteland. Because, you forget things. Like, memories just kind of fade away over time.
The scene before that, when they have, like, the little mind worker guys, like, oh, yeah, chuck it, and they're, like, vacuuming up all the old memories.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that was some Terry Gilliam in Brazil.
The way they managed to anthropomorphize everything, like... What the worker guys send up the old gum commercial as a joke. They're like, oh yeah, we love to make her remember this, and then they make her like that just was... the way they get they explain the way things in your mind work is phenomenal. And
that was amazing.
Very clever.
Yeah, and that thing about the gum commercial is that's been stuck in my head for like the entire week and a half since I've seen this movie.
Yeah.
It just comes up randomly. It's like triple dent gum.
And when they have the other emotions, like trying to recall a memory, and that comes up by accident, and they're like, no, anger freaks out.
Yes. But in any case, they get into this valley of discarded memories, and there's no way out. Like, this is like a terrible
where they go to die.
Thing. But Bing Bong has a rocket sled, which sounds like a ridiculous sentence, but it works in the context of this movie. I'm trying to think about myself like recommending this movie to somebody who doesn't want to see it and be like, well, Bing Bong has a rocket sled.
Powered by song.
And they'll be like, okay, great, thanks. And
perfect, yeah.
But
Bing Bong... Just watch The Explorers. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So Bing Bong has a rocket sled that's powered by song. And he and Joy are trying to sing the Bing Bong song.
Yeah, and escape the
and
dead memory.
And escape the thing. They, like, build a ramp and, like, just jump up there. But they're not making... Bing Bong realizes, like, you know, he's weighing Joy down, basically.
Right.
And he's like, all right, this one's going to work. And they sing the song, they get up there, and Bing Bong jumps out. And Joy makes it out. And Bing Bong doesn't. And then he fades away.
He just kind of disappears. It's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really crazy.
Yeah, it was really sad.
It's like you have to leave, you know, your childhood behind in order to grow emotionally. It was like, what the fuck?
Boom!
Yeah. And I also noticed they used a book as the ramp, and I thought that was really cool to escape the dead memories and get happiness. They used a book. So reading is fundamental, kids.
Okay.
I'm going to put that in that scene, because why not?
Sure.
I'm an English major. I can do whatever I want.
I mean, the book was also in the Sea of Dead Memories.
That's true. It allowed happiness to escape.
So fair enough.
Shut your face, Mike.
Fair enough. Okay. Yeah, fair.
But that was one manly tear of a shed. As we see Bing Bong just disappear.
Yeah. Can I ask when your other manly tear was?
The group hug at the end.
Okay.
The family hug. Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I thought, I think this film's ultimate message is that, sadness is a necessary part of life.
Right. That was, intense when Happiness has that moment when she's looking at the hockey memory.
Yeah.
And she, like, goes back, like, you know, rewinds it a couple seconds and sees that happiness came out of sadness.
Yeah, like, it was originally a sad memory that became a happy one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was, like, that's such a really strong message for a kid's movie.
Right.
To have. Right. You know, it'll, like, sadness is ultimately what allows you to feel joy.
Yeah.
Is basically what it's saying. And it's sort of advocating that, like, all of your emotions are equally important. You know, it's basically teaching kids how to express themselves emotionally.
Yeah.
Which is something that most movies don't do. I feel like a lot of animated movies are just, like, constant joy all the way through. Or, like, an attempt at constant joy. All the way through, and are terrible because of it.
Somehow Pixar has this ability to focus on kids' issues in a way, or, you know, things that kids of whatever target age they're going for, like, would be thinking about. Like, you know, Riley is 11 or 12, and she's, like, just kind of figuring out who she is as a person, and kids that are on that age would be going through this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Toy Story, they're, what, you know, you'd be, you know, you'd have that fantastical thing of what your toys are doing.
Toy Story 3 came out the summer before I left for college.
Right.
And it was, like, the most devastating, like, horror.
knew what they were doing. Like, Toy Story 1 came out when we were little kids doing little kid things, and then Toy Story 3 is when we're starting college, and it's like, oh, fuck. God damn it, Pixar.
Yeah. Getting in my head.
Yeah. But there's a few moments that are, like, laugh-out-loud hilarious.
Yeah, there's a lot of great jokes in this movie. Like, let's not make it seem like you're just going to cry the entire time.
But you probably will.
Yeah, there's a lot of really funny scenes in this movie. Particularly, like, I think anything involving fear was really great.
Yes. Yeah,
fear, awesome. Fear and anger were awesome. But Bill Hader as fear was great. I think there's a scene... where Joy and Sadness go into, like, the dream studios that Riley has, like, in her head. That kind of creates, like, the dreams that you see when
you sleep. That concept was amazing.
Yeah. It was like
Hollywood. Yeah.
It was like a Hollywood studio, but it was like inside your head. And like they kind of created the dreams that air when you're sleeping.
Right.
And, you know, they're trying to wake Riley up by like, Joy is trying to wake her up by making her so happy that she wakes up.
Yeah.
Which is a ridiculous idea.
That's a different kind of dream.
And then Sadness realizes, like, no, we can scare her awake.
Scare her awake, right.
And then basically they accidentally do that.
Yeah. The great joke, sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
No, what were you saying?
When they're walking through and they're walk past the studio and there's the giant posters for the, like, the famous dreams that have been made. And it's like, I'm falling down a hole. And it's the poster for Vertigo.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of film geek jokes in this movie. There's that and there was
my favorite joke.
The Chinatown joke.
Yes.
Yeah. Forget it, Jake. It's Cloud Town.
It's Cloud Town. That was amazing.
Yes. And there's also, I mean, there's a bunch of, like, Pixar always puts Easter eggs in their movies, like, quoting other Pixar movies. And I found them actually really difficult to spot in this movie.
I don't remember any of them.
Well, I was looking them up, and I guess a lot of them are in memories, in Riley's, like, memory wall, basically. You can see, specifically, you can see scenes from Up in that memory. You can see Carl and Ellie in those memories.
Wow.
So, there's that.
I wonder where the Planet Express truck, or Pizza Express, or whatever.
Pizza Planet.
Pizza Planet. That was cool. Planet Express is Futurama.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Supposedly, yeah, Pizza Planet truck is in there. There's also, there's a shot of Riley's family going to San Francisco, and you can see the birds from Four of the Birds on a telephone pole.
Really?
On a telephone line, yeah.
That's awesome.
Also, incidentally, I thought one of the best jokes in this movie was when Riley and her mom got pizza and there was broccoli on it. And Lewis Black just shouts, or Anger just shouts, it's like, oh, way to go, San Francisco. You managed to ruin pizza.
Yeah. That was great. What about the stuff that was, like, when they go to the subconscious? Not in terms of jokes. But just in terms of, like, really heavy shit that this movie handles.
Yeah.
Go to the subconscious. And the cops that were guarding the subconscious were hilarious.
Yeah, they were really funny. That was, the cops were Frank Oz and, Dave Goals or something? Two Muppet guys. Frank Oz, obviously, but the other guy is, one of the modern Muppet guys. But, oh, nice. That was neat. But yeah, they were really funny.
They were great.
And that whole concept of great subconscious. I thought the Room of Abstract Thought the one you were talking about before.
With the animation, yeah.
That was really cool.
That blew my mind. I was like, are kids supposed to be able to follow this? Like, I don't think they get it.
Yeah, that was like the movie really trying to experiment with its animation.
Yeah.
And
they become two-dimensional.
Yeah. A lot of really fun stuff there.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, it didn't happen a lot, but there was, like, one scene during the movie, and then they did it during the end credits, where you go see other people's mind controls.
Yes.
Which I thought was great. I thought that was amazing.
That was fun.
The one scene during the movie I thought was great, with Riley's mom and Riley's dad.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really funny. Like, the, all five of the emotions, Riley's mom. She's had, like, the pulled back hair and the lipstick and the glasses.
And the glasses, yeah.
And Riley's dad all have, like, mustaches and are watching a hockey game.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting to see, too. They showed each one had a different dominant, emotion. Like, Riley was joy.
Yes. I was actually thinking about that, too. And her mom was sadness and her
sadness.
Dad was anger.
Was anger, yeah. Was the one that was in control of the control board.
Yeah. So I thought that was really cool, too.
That was unique, yeah.
I agree with you there. Yeah, I thought that was a really funny scene.
when the dad's watching the hockey, remembering a hockey game instead of listening to his wife.
And, like, they realize she's trying to signal him, and they're like, oh God, what does she want? Oh, do we leave the toilet seat up?
Is it garbage day? What do we do?
Like, what is it, woman? What? And she like signals him again. She's like, "Oh, Riley, how was school?" And all of the mom's emotions just go, "Ah!"
It was so good.
Seriously.
Oh man.
And they're like, "We gave up the Brazilian helicopter pilot."
Right, and they watched that memory instead.
And then that comes back again in the teacher's memory at the end of the movie.
Right. Yeah, they do. I'm glad they brought back, or I mean, not brought back, but I do love that in the credits of a lot of Pixar movies, they have some kind of gag going.
Yeah, like the end credits of Toy Story 2, it's bloopers going on. I think Monsters, Inc. does that, too.
Monsters, Inc. has bloopers also, yeah.
So that was cool. That was cool to see. That's fun.
Apparently, Rashida Jones was the voice of the cool girl in School's Memories when they go to that.
Yeah, I think I did hear that. Yeah.
In the end credits, which was cool.
Yeah, and Pete Docter was actually the voice of Anger in The Father's Head.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is interesting because he came up with this movie. The reason this movie came about is because Pete Docter moved from Minnesota to California, basically to work at Pixar. Oh. And so he's had that in his head for a while, but also he made this movie as, like, a way for him to kind of understand his daughter.
Would make sense.
So to have Pete Docter as the voice of the daughter's father's emotion in this movie, I thought was really a cool touch.
That's nice.
I thought there's so much of this movie that works on so many levels.
Yeah.
It's incredible, really. This is a great Pixar movie.
Yeah, I like that at the end of every day, they send the memories to long-term memory. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It was just really, everything was so clever. I can't get past that.
So many cool, like, different concepts. And they never, like, slow down. They never, like, try to explain a lot of this different stuff.
Right.
It gets explained over time. You kind of understand what it's doing. And Joey spends the first few minutes, like, setting up the world. But, like, otherwise, like, they basically just tell you to go with it.
Right. And just let it happen.
I really love this movie. It sounds like you really liked it, too.
Yeah.
People should go see it. People are seeing it.
Hopefully the next one has Kevin Bacon in it. But, you know, I'll let it slide this time.
Yeah, I mean, there's so far in the announced cast with The Good Dinosaur, there is no Kevin Bacon so far. But
Hashtag Bacon Dinosaur. Let's make it happen, people.
Hashtag Bacon Dinosaur.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking forward to The Good Dinosaur. That's going to be the first time, because that movie's coming out in November. And that's going to be the first time there's going to be two Pixar movies in 1 year.
Wow.
So if they can both be great...
That'd be phenomenal.
I will be like, all right, I take back everything I've said about Pixar in the last 5 years.
They're not going anywhere.
Not going anywhere. These guys are still at it. Yeah, so I'm really jazzed for The Good Dinosaur. I loved Inside Out. Mm-hmm. And so if The Good Dinosaur is great, then hopefully the rest of their movies can stand up to snuff. I know they have at least one other original movie in the works after that. There's going to be a Dia de los Muertos movie. Directed by Lee Unkrich, who directed Toy Story 3.
Okay.
So, there's that.
That's cool.
But then they also have Finding Dory, Toy Story 4, and The Incredibles 2. And to their credit, Finding Dory will be directed by Andrew Stanton, who directed Finding Nemo, and WALL-E.
Alright.
And he's part of the original Pixar brain trust. Like, he's one of those guys I trust a lot.
Yeah.
Toy Story 4 will be directed by John Lasseter. Again, one of the original Pixar brain trust. And The Incredibles 2 will be directed by Brad Bird. So they're bringing back all these great people to do these movies.
Right.
So, you know, I have hope.
So have some faith, yeah.
Yeah, I'm having faith. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm excited. That'll be cool.
Yeah. But, I think that about wraps it up for our Inside Out podcast, Mike.
Yes, I would agree.
Can you tell people where they can find your work on... In the world this week.
You can find it on this thing called the internet, Mike. On twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
Yes, and you can find my work on twitter.com/emmasmithfilmblog. I also work at filmbook.com, where I podcast about many, many things, including The Walking Dead, TV shows like The Walking Dead and Arrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and so much stuff.
Too many things to remember.
Too many things to remember is exactly what I'm saying. So if you're listening to this podcast on iTunes, you know, subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. For more of our thoughts on Inside Out and other films and TV shows, check out our work on Twitter or on Filmbook. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email because of all the different podcasts we do. We'd like to hear from you. And also, check out The Complete Works, which is our in-depth look into the career of Nicolas Cage. Next week, we're going to be reviewing Valley Girl, which was Nicolas Cage's first film role. And
As Nicolas Cage.
I think, I'm still not sure if he's actually credited as Nicolas Cage in that movie. But we'll find out.
We'll let you know next week.
Yes. We'll let you know in episode 3 of The Complete Works. And
there we go.
Stay tuned for Film Bookcast in 2 weeks. where what will we be reviewing, Mike? We should probably review Terminator, I guess.
Yeah, or will Ant-Man be out by then?
Nah.
That's July, right?
Well, we're recording this a little late, so...
That's true.
If we're keeping to our schedule, this weekend is Complete Works, and then the week after that's Film Book Cast.
Right.
So I think a week after that is when Ant-Man will come out. So we'll probably review Ant-Man in the next episode of Film Book Cast after that.
The next Film Book.
But so probably Terminator, unless you want to review Magic Mike, XXL.
Don't tempt me with a good time.
I've actually heard it's not bad. I've heard it's pretty good.
Shut your mouth.
Did you see the original Magic Mike?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I thought Magic Mike was fun. I wanted to see it because it was a Steven Soderbergh movie.
Wait, what? I didn't know that.
Wait, really? You didn't know that?
No.
Steven Soderbergh directed the original Magic Mike.
That's amazing.
And Magic Mike XXL was directed by, I forget the guy's name, but he's been a second assistant to Steven Soderbergh for years. And Soderbergh also edited Magic Mike XXL and was the cinematographer. So he worked on the movie.
Okay.
So ultimately, I probably will end up seeing Magic Mike XXL just out of solidarity with Soderbergh.
Right.
But I've heard it's not bad. I've heard it's
all right.
Basically, I thought Magic Mike was fun. Did you not? I guess you didn't see it. But
I didn't see it.
It's not very good, but.
However,
I think the thing is
save it for the XXL review.
All of the drama in Magic Mike is really boring and on the nose and dumb. But all the stripping scenes are fantastic. They're really funny and really fun to watch.
Oh my god!
And McConaughey is great in that movie.
True.
So there's that. And from what I've heard about XXL, it's basically just the stripping scenes blown up to their maximum proportion. So.
All right.
So who knows?
Might be worth it. But probably Terminator.
We'll probably end up reviewing Terminator, because that sounds like it's going to be a fun discussion, because apparently that movie's terrible. So
yes, done. Sign me up.
So, I mean, I'd rather see a good movie than a terrible movie, but I have such solidarity, I have such an intense devotion to the Terminator franchise that is completely undeserved.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, they made... The last good Terminator movie was in 1991. Why should I still be so devoted to this franchise? I don't know.
Right. I said in the Jurassic World review, that my friend had Jurassic Park and Terminator 2 on VHS, and we would just watch them constantly.
Yeah. So there you go.
I'm in.
All right. So join us in 2 weeks, Film Bookcast, where we'll be reviewing Terminator Genesis. And join us in 1 week for The Complete Works, where we will be reviewing Valley Girl. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show, and we are out.